Yud Gimel Elul, Friday the 16th of September, Rabbi Doniel Schoenfeld, Airport Favours. Airport Favours, please take this cocaine for me.
Good morning. As you might find out, it wasn't such a favour, it was a favour for one person, it wasn't a favour for the other. I saw this week's parasha is full with many, many different mitzvahs, covers a wide range of topics. We're going to discuss a shaila, and hopefully we'll touch upon a number of those mitzvahs through the course of the discussion. Anything which isn't understood, please point it out and fill in any gaps. The story was as follows. It didn't actually happen in the basement where I was, but one of the Dayonim said he was there when it happened. So I believe him. He filled me in with the problem. It's very interesting. Very interesting story. The man was, let's call him Reuven, went on an aeroplane. A man called Reuven went on an aeroplane and he sat down, took his place, took off his jacket, put it on the overhead locker, sat down, enjoyed the flight. At the end of the flight, put his jacket back on, disembarked, got his suitcase, all the usual story. Goes through customs, and after he passes through the doors of the other end, he gets a tap on the shoulder, and he turns around, and the man facing him, he does not recognize. The man says, "Hello, I think you have, there was a mistake over here, I think you have an envelope in your pocket of mine." And Reuven says, "No, I don't have anything, tries to carry on his way. The man goes, no, really, there was a mistake, I've put it in the wrong jacket, I'm sure it's in your jacket, please give it back to me." So Reuven checks in his jacket, and he has an envelope in his pocket. And he goes, "My hi. What's the story?" So the man facing him, let's call him Shimon, says, "Really, it was a mix-up. I put it in the wrong jacket." And very, very good. Yeah, very good. After customs, very nice. Yes. What happened? He opens it up. There's diamonds inside. There's diamonds inside, and he goes, "Really, what happened? There's no mistake over here. I'm not giving it back to you until he." Eventually, the man tells him, "Yeah, over here in the Middle East, they do profiling in customs. They don't." And someone who doesn't know if they're carrying anything illegal is far less likely to be caught. So if I would be carrying it, I would be sweating, I would be shaking, and very high likelihood of being stopped. You, however, you had no idea. You'll walk through. I didn't mean any harm. And here we are. As you can see, everything was fine. So Reuven says, "Yeah, everything's fine up till now. You're not getting these back until we sort this out properly." That's how they came to Beis Din. The shaila is, Reuven's demanding payment. Can he keep the diamonds? He says, "Listen, I don't think this guy deserves. If he's going to be doing this the whole time, then there's no end. I give them back to him. Next time, he'll do exactly the same thing." So what? That's the question. Is there any possibility? Is there any tzad of him being able to? No. And if not, does he deserve payment? He says, "Okay, fine. So the diamonds are yours. But I've done you a good service. It would have cost you a bit of money to do such a thing. Jolly well pay me for my services." So in this week's parasha, it says, when two people come to din, it says, based on the stikos a tzaddik v'shuas a rosha, based on the side who the tzaddik is, and based on the side who the rosha is. Some story is very blatant, who the tzaddik and who the rosha is. I think this is one of the stories. Don't even stikos a tzaddik. We know the tzaddik, we know who the rosha is. The question is, what's going to happen to the rosha? What would you say from Svara? Does he deserve payment?
Why is it he doesn't deny the mistakes?
He admits to the other person. The truth is, he said, "Prove it." He did say to the man, "Prove they're yours. Maybe they're not yours. Maybe you saw someone else put them in there." And the man said, "No, I've got certificates. I've got simonim. I've got simamuva."
So it is.
And therefore.
Therefore, he keeps the diamonds until the other person can prove that they're his.
Oh, so he did. He said, "I've got Simon, I've got certificate. Their certificate in, and I've still. I didn't give you the certificate."
Oh.
"The certificate's in my pocket," says Shimon.
"Where was the certificate?"
Not with the carrier. With the owner. The owner still had the certificate.
Oh, but that's not with the diamonds, so it could be to anybody.
Good. He said, "I'm a diamond. I can show you. If you bring me a microscope, I don't know how it works." He said, "I can show you in the diamonds that they're mine." What right does he have? So let's see. Let's see if he has any right. And what about payment? Does he have any payment right? Any right to payment?
No.
He could have gone to jail.
He wouldn't have gone to jail.
Why not?
They wouldn't have believed him if you would have said.
I wouldn't believe him.
because you really didn't know about it.
I'm sure people have tried that before. They come to customs and they say, no, it wasn't me.
Would it make any difference if it was a drop or something?
Same question. It was a massive amount. I was told for this amount, this type of money, you do go to jail.
Whether that's right or...
So, I'll tell you what came out, what was discussed and what can be discussed, and let me know what you think. There's a remor in Choshe Mishpat who says that a father-in-law who sees his son-in-law not learning with his grandchildren, with his son-in-law's children, and he wants to encourage him to learn. So the father-in-law thinks it's a good idea. He says, I'll pay you. The son-in-law's not a poor man. He has money, but he's just not interested in learning with his children. So he says, listen, I'll pay you a high amount. If you learn with my grandchildren, learn with your children. Then the son-in-law eventually learns with the children. And afterwards, the father-in-law says, only joking. Mishata ani bach. Didn't mean it. You jolly well learn with your kids. You know, you got a vishinanto melevonecha. You've got a chiv. There's not an option over there. I was just trying to encourage you. I'm not going to pay you any money. Does he have to pay or not? Says the remor, he doesn't have to pay. He doesn't need to pay. Explains the nesivos, because when you have a mitzvah to do something, then you're not a worker of mine, you're a worker of Hashem. You're not, you jolly well do the job. You can't be considered, the balabos, the employer, can pull out and say, I'm not chayv to pay you for that, you were anyway chayv to do the job.
So,
if you say to someone, asei lechos sukkah, make yourself a sukkah, asei lechot tefillin, and a man doesn't have a sukkah, he doesn't have tefillin, he would have to make for himself, you're not chayv to pay him for those services. That's for a mitzvah.
He could be doing another mitzvah that he might prefer.
But when it comes to tefillin, you have to make tefillin. You don't have an option. If you don't have tefillin, then you'd have to stop. You'd have to stop learning and make your tefillin. Or if you don't have a sukkah, you'd have to stop whatever you're doing and make a sukkah.
Who pays him for his expertise and all the years he spent learning how to do it?
To make what?
Make the sukkah, make tefillin.
He has to. Even if he would be on a desert island alone, he'd have to build that sukkah. With no one offering him any money at all, he would have to build that sukkah. Now that I've come and told you, I'll give you 100 quid for it, doesn't mean I have to pay you. You anyway have to do that. That's a svar over there. That's in the Choshe Mishpat. The Menachas Pitim, and there's a ritva on Bob Metzir, who takes that stage further. Not only when there's a mitzvah, but any action a person would have been doing anyway, you would anyway be doing what you're doing. Not a sofik, not maybe. You would definitely be doing what you're doing, and I say, I'll pay you for doing that. I don't have to pay you for that. Because you're anyway going to be doing it. So the fact that I told you, I might be a liar. I'm not talking about Hilchas Sheker and Ben Odom Chavir. I'm talking about strictly Choshe Mishpat. As the law will hold you accountable, you will not have to pay for that action. If so, argued Shimon, the owner of the diamonds, that you were walking through customs anyway, weren't you? You weren't going to go through a back door. There's no other way out the airport. You were going to go through anyway. So why do I have to pay you? I shouldn't have to pay you for that. So I personally don't think that's correct. The reason being that, you're right, he was walking through, but he wasn't carrying an envelope when he was walking through. He was walking through with his jacket and his pens and whatever else he had in his pocket. Carrying through an envelope is an extra action. Right, the legs are moving the same way, but the carrying is an extra, I'm carrying something through customs for you. That's a different action to what I was doing before. I wasn't willing to carry through things through customs for anybody. And therefore I would, don't agree? You would apply that to human services. Okay.
Dennis can perhaps claim danger money. As you say, that he would go to prison for it, you can claim perhaps that you put my life in danger. For that, compensation, but payment? No.
Payment, you don't agree. So I spoke to a few people. You don't agree?
Sorry. What about the import duty that you say?
No, that's...
The Nana. We'll come on to Nana. I see the import duty. There's a show. Okay, we'll come to that. I did have people who agree. It could be up for debate. There will be other reasons to pat in. What do I want to say? Yes. So, assuming that he can be paid for his work because he is doing a job of carrying through these diamonds and deserves payment. The problem is, there's been no agreed price. They haven't fixed the price. So, how much should he be paid? So, Shulchan Aruch says in Choshe Mishpat, since Shin Lamed Aleph, a person who doesn't fix a price with his worker. Pays him whatever he was nene, whatever he benefited from the work. You see how much a normal worker gets for that type of job, and you pay him accordingly.
It's a criminal endeavor.
You have to pay, right, of a smuggler. The shach, in fact, the shach brings a case of what happens if you send someone to carry. There was talking about sforim. It's carried from one city to another, books of sforim, and there's a mechas in the middle. There's a tax collector who he has to pay, and somehow this courier manages to get out of the ma'arik. Says you have to pay him for his services for getting out of that. You have to pay him what he deserves, whatever, like you said, whatever you deserve.
The full tax he has to pay.
So no, he says nene, whatever you were nene, how we measure how much you would pay a person to do that job for you. The full amount is only really a grommet. That's he didn't give him money, he just saved him a loss. See, that wouldn't actually be, you'd have to pay how much you would pay a person to do that type of job.
Mavriach harim.
That's exactly. But he says it's chayv and nene. Chayv and nene. However, in that case, the shach is talking, it's a marik, and the marik is discussing a case where you sent the man to take your books, and to try and do the best job he can. This guy didn't know. This guy had no idea what he was doing. Reuven, who was carrying the envelope, had no idea what he was doing. And the shach says in Shin Sadi Aleph, in a later place, that if you don't know that you're benefiting someone, then the person who benefits from you does not need to pay you for that. It's the intent. It's the intent to bring benefit to someone that is mechayev the beneficiary to pay. If so, in our case, there wouldn't be nene. He would be potter from paying. Does that mean he gets back the diamonds free of
duty?
I don't have to pay you. You didn't want to give me any benefits. I don't pay you. Now, we were talking about Aveda before. It's also in this week's parsha, Hashavas Aveda, Hoshav Toshav Loi, and we said that the man gave a simon to prove that they were his diamonds. I don't have the time, by the way. I mean, I do, but I'm not in front of me. Just see. There's a simon in Choshen Mishpot. The case is as follows in Choshen Mishpot. If you lend somebody money, a friend money, and an exact amount, £100, and he pays you back in shtaros, he counts out to you £120 without saying anything. Counts back to you £120. Do you have to notify him on this mistake? Yeah, it's not really a mistake, he's counting to you. 120. He knows he owes you £100, he's counted out 120. So the halacha says, the Mora says, that if there's a possibility that he's giving you a present, you can keep it as a present. Right, yeah, as alvo would be. Ribbis, let's say you sold him something. Correct. So it would be alvo, then if you sold him something, or ribbis, discard no issue of ribbis, if there's a way around ribbis. Correct. Issue, that would be an issue that would have to be, in our case it won't be relevant. If there's a possibility he gave you a present, you can keep the money without notifying him. In our case, I don't think there's a possibility of the person, you don't know who this man is, why should he be giving you a present? You, by your own admission, you don't recognize the man. There is another possibility, however. If you know the man, you've had interaction with him, and it's a possibility he once stole from you, and he's now paying you back, he's embarrassed to say, I stole from you and I want to give back what I stole, and perhaps he's just paying you back now for what he stole. In our case, could that be relevant in our case? Perhaps yes, perhaps not. However, the amount that was due, the sum of the diamonds, this man says, I never owed. I never owned. I didn't have such a large amount of money ever in my possession. Therefore, it's not possible that somebody stole it from me. But he said that. I'm not such a rich man. So you wouldn't be. However, someone argued as follows. Very good, you never had that money in your possession. But perhaps somebody was going to pay you that amount of money. Perhaps you won, I don't know, maybe you won a lottery. Maybe something happened. And you were deserving of this amount of money, and this Shimon somehow took that money, and now he's paying you back. Far-fetched. That was the suggestion. The Re'eim, with very logical thinking, says that as much as the Gemara says these klolim, you obviously have to be sensible. Masha Einov Rois, yes? Masha Einov Rois, Einov Adayin Rois? It's not Mestaba. We're not going to give presents to people, which is very unlikely to be... To be true. However, there is a din. Now, in this week's Sedra, as I say, there's Hashavas Aveda. Who do you have to give an Aveda to? Goyim, you don't. I mean, Yidden, you have to give back Avedas to, right? That's Ochicho, it says. Apikoros? A Rosha. Let's start with a Rosha. A Rosha. Somebody who's a Rosha. I think this man's a Rosha, personally. Shimon. He's a Rosha. Do you have to give an Aveda back to a Rosha? So you do. The Rambam says you do. You have to give. It says, Lo Ochicho, Afilu Rabbis is a Rosha. Sorry?
You need to write it to Mizrusha.
By his own admission, he said what he did. You mean maybe he did Shuvah? Maybe he did Shuvah. Maybe he did Shuvah. Yeah. Very good, very good. Sorry? Oh, why is this an Aveda? So, what? Correct, we should establish. What is it? What is this money? How do you categorize this money? If it's not, he's not a showing. It's what? Aveda Medas. Aveda Medas. So you wouldn't be chayav. But the problem is, perhaps, but he didn't mean to. What's an Aveda Medas mean? Aveda Medas, just to fill in, Aveda Medas, that you're bringing up. The Rambam says you don't have to give it back, and the Torah says it's hefka. Anyone can take it. The Rambam doesn't say you can take it, he just says you don't have to give it back. So what you do with it is based on your discretion, but the Torah says you can keep it. So if the person's got it, maybe you could say, kimli that. That's Aveda Medas. But what is the case in Aveda? Aveda Medas means you put something in a dustbin, you chuck it in the street. Aveda Medas means, with your own intention, you lose it, you throw it away. He didn't hear, he wanted to look after it. This was the best way of him looking after it. Ladai Toy, this is the best shmir he could give these diamonds. So it wouldn't necessarily, it wouldn't be, but what would it be? L'chari is only left as a regular Aveda. The guy doesn't have it, he wants to get it. What else is it? Mavriach Harid. Mavriach Harid is what you're chayav to pay. But what's the status of this money? Is it owned? Is it a pikodon by somebody? What is this money?
If there's a flood coming, and I see that the flood's coming over to my field, and I quickly take somebody else's, my neighbor's thing, and I put something there to stop it, I've stopped my damage by using his thing without permission.
Correct.
Right? So I have to repay him for any loss. But if there was no loss, then there's a rosher to object.
Okay, but why does that define the status of this money? As it is in his pocket, in Reuben's pocket, how does that relate to Shimon? Shimon, the owner, he doesn't have it, he can't get it. He wants to get his money, what's that called?
Give it back.
Give it back, but what? Before whether he has to give it back or not, let's just decide what the status of that money is.
His pocket.
It belongs to him. Every Aveda belongs to the owner. Everyone who's lost
he's
something.
He's proved that he's the owner, so what do you want?
Okay, so Shomer who has an Aveda, and the guy proves it's his, is it no longer an Aveda?
It's
an Aveda,
he
has to give back.
He never lost it.
It never was an Aveda.
Yeah, the English translation of Aveda means lost, but the halachic definition of Aveda means something that you don't have that you're trying to get back. Aveda doesn't have to be that you don't know where it is. You could jolly well know where it is, but you don't know where it is. You have a mitzvah to help that person. Every Aveda, if you see someone, as he's bringing an example, you see something's getting ruined. You see something's about to get ruined. Yeah, you have a car, you see a guy about to. Are you supposed to stop that man or not?
Yes.
Why? That's not a chiyuv. That just tells you if you have to pay or not. Where's Mavriach Harid say? The whole chiyuv to stop someone, to save somebody's money is only learned from a Shavuot
Aveda. Whether you can ask for compensation later. That is to say, yes, he has to pay for it. Kedoshim, Adoshim, you remember the Gemara, no? But if there's no loss, this fellow walking through customs...
At the moment he doesn't have his diamonds. At the moment he doesn't have his diamonds, he wants to get them back.
No, but I'm talking about Reuven.
He put them in a safe place. But it turns out it's not so safe. It turns out it's not so safe, because he can't get them back. He can't get them back. You know it, okay. So you know where your car is, the guy's about to scratch it. Should I stop him? You know where it is, come yourself. You can't come, right, because you're at work. You can't come and stop him. You can't save your car, you can't get your car from stop it being scratched. I've got Chiyuv HaShavuot Aveda to stop him. So here you can't get your diamonds back. You're as if you're away from the diamonds. You know where they are, but you can't get them.
Why not?
So,
why
is it Aveda Midas, you're saying? You're saying that's called an Aveda Midas, but I'm saying it can't be called an Aveda Midas because the person doesn't want to throw them away. So what? How else can you? Do I have a chiv to give them back to you?
Because if, for example, the pocket of the jacket that you put it into happened by chance to be somebody who works for the customs, and he found out afterwards that it wasn't such a mukum shumah as he thought, and he fell right into the deep end. So it's a chadash to zicher that the person that he left it with is a mukum shumah.
If that would have happened, but I'm saying, as it is at the moment, okay, I'm being magdir, the chiv of Hashavas Aveda is not to return lost articles. The chiv of Hashavas Aveda is to return things to people who don't have them. Who don't have them. That's the chiv of Hashavas Aveda. That's what we learn from Hashavas Aveda, that's the chiv.
It's not an Aveda.
If that's the Anocha.
It's
Either way, what I'm saying is, to a Rosha, you don't have to give Asher... One minute, let me just continue on that and we'll see where we're going. To a Rosha, you don't have to give... You do have to give back an Aveda. To a Rosha, you do. Apikoris, you don't. Someone who's Matzaris HaRabin. And you get it. Someone who's Matzaris HaRabin. There's a sugi of Moisa, which is extremely chomor, and I don't want to get heavily involved in, and it should be, each case should be judged on its own merit, and should never be compared one to another. But Matzaris HaRabim, the Ramad discusses a case of Matzaris HaRabim. Someone who his case is, he forges money in his garage. Nobody knows about it. The authorities have no idea. In his garage, he's forging money. If he's caught, there's going to be a very big sakona to the whole community, to the whole community. Is one allowed to report? Obviously. Yeah? Obviously. Why? Says the Vilna Gaon, even though the man doesn't intend to harm anyone, he's just trying to make a livelihood, right? He's not trying to harm anyone, it's Einam Eschaven. Even so, obviously you report him. Yeah, I'm just speaking here. It's Einam Eschaven. He's not trying to hurt anyone. That's definitely Einam Eschaven, but even so, it's irrelevant.
If he's caught, everyone's a problem.
Absolutely, yeah, I'm just saying, even though it's Einam Eschaven, it's Poshut. Correct. Even though it's Groma. He's not doing anything direct. He's working here, and people are getting punished over there. Yeah, it's not direct. It's Groma. Says Ramot, Afilo Achi, Chayav. It's a sophic, yeah? Many people have done this and not been caught. Even so, he's a Matzaris HaRabim, and he has the same din as he would have the same din as Gabi Aved as an Apikoros. Because, let me explain, the Shach says, brings Agos Ashri, that Hashavas Aveda to such a person, not only is one not Chayav, he's not Bechlal Ochicho, he's not called Hashavas Ochicho, he's not called your brother, more than that, it's Osir to give it back to him. Why is it Osir to give it back to him? Because if you give it back to him, he's just going to continue his work.
Encourage.
Exactly. It's Misayel De Avera. You're not allowed to give back. You're not allowed to help people who are doing Averas. Therefore, it would be Osir to give it back to him. If so, what do you say in our case?
There's no danger to the whole city.
Oh, so they worked out that this is not the first time this man has done it. They know at least one other time that he's done it. Is that enough? The Shach brings a Rajbar that says no. You need three times. Three times. To prove that... No, because if he's going to cause damage, then of course.
But he's not causing damage to anybody else except himself. You'll go, doctor.
No, that's what you're saying. I don't think that's correct. I think the person who's carrying all this.
If he's going through that, he's going to have problems now. Possible.
And the rest him, they want the after to last
guy. Either way, of course, this guy has to be reported. The Rabbi Kiva Eger says even twice. It's called a chazaka, and if it's once and it's obvious, yep. That's called Matzaris HaRabim. People who are making it, yeah, it's called Matzaris HaRabim. I think, therefore, it's not only you're not chayv to give back his property, it's also to give it back. Now, you're saying it's not called an Aveda. Let's say, even if it's not called an Aveda, says the Ramah, although we're not allowed to destroy money of this Matzaris HaRabim, you're not allowed to go into his house and start smashing his windows and his things. You're not allowed to do that. Says the Ramah, but if you have his money in your pocket, you don't have to give it back. You don't have to give it back. Why aren't you allowed to go to his house and smash his windows? Not because he doesn't deserve it. He does deserve it. But the reason is because he might have kids who don't deserve it. And it says, Yochin Rosha v'yilbash tzaddik. The Pasuk says that sometimes a Rosha will prepare money and a tzaddik will benefit from it. So you're right, he doesn't deserve it, but perhaps his kids will deserve it. Why are you taking it away from his kids? Says a chasam soifa, if somebody has the money in his own pocket, the Pasuk doesn't say who the tzaddik is. Yochin Rosha v'yilbash tzaddik. Sometimes a Rosha prepares money, and a tzaddik benefits from it. The Gemara says that's referring to the Yorshin. Says the Chasam Sofer, if you have it in your pocket, you be the tzaddik. The Pasuk doesn't say the tzaddik is the Yorshin. It says that don't take it away, don't deprive the Yorshin from it, because they may be tzaddikim. But if you're a tzaddik and you have it, then we won't deprive you either. You can keep it. There's no reason for you to give it back for the same reason as we don't take it from the Yorshin. Says Ramah, you would be able to keep that money. You'd be able to keep that money? Obviously on the decision of Beis Din. You'd have to be discussed.
To teach him a lesson.
And according to
And to teach him a lesson.
To teach him a lesson. All these things are, by the way, according to the law, of course, according to the law of the land, as the Chazanish speaks out, that halacha is very much dependent on the law of the land, and in many circumstances it mustn't conflict. According to halacha, it mustn't conflict. Not because according to halacha, it mustn't conflict the law of the land. If so, the person will be able to keep it according to that psak. Now, before I finish, I just want to bring another scenario, and tell me what you think. It's another airport scenario. A man is standing at the gate. Gate's ready to board the aeroplane. And he gets a tap on the shoulder. And the man holding his Sefer Torah, he says, I just need to go to the bathroom. Can you hold my Sefer Torah, please? So he says, sure. And he holds the Sefer Torah and he waits. And the man doesn't come back. Last call for flight, boarding to wherever. And got no choice. You can't give a Sefer Torah to lost and found. And you can't leave it on the chair. So what do you do? Take it with you. It's the only option. You have no other option unless someone else is willing to take it off you. Takes it with him. And it was quite a long flight. It was 11 hours. And he's holding his Sefer Torah. You can't put this, there's no option of putting this in the overhead locker. Perhaps because you're not allowed to, you know when you put your tefillin on, you're not supposed to hang your tefillin, your shal yad, you're not supposed to hold it, you're supposed to hold the bais, you're supposed to hold the box, not covered for the tefillin to hold it hanging. Similar halacha with the Sefer Torah, you're not allowed to hold the Sefer Torah hanging, you're not allowed to hang it off a hook, right? Sefer Torah, you don't find it. In the shops, they sell the mantles hanging, the Sefer Torah, you're not allowed to do that. Is this called hanging, sorry?
Get another seat,
yeah. He didn't have a free seat next to him, obviously. Is the overhead considered hanging? Perhaps yes, perhaps not. But there's another reason why you can't put it in the overhead, because it doesn't have a shmira, and when someone opens it, the thing can fall out, and you're not allowed to do it. If you've seen everyone at Kodesh, it has a chain in front or a stick. It has some sort of extra shmira in front of the door. That's a chiv on the Sefer Torah. So you wouldn't be able to put it there. So the man's holding it, and at the end of the flight, the man who he originally met says, "I've been looking for you the whole flight. My Sefer Torah, I can't believe it. I was looking for you before. I couldn't find you. Where did you go? You bought it without me. Thank you so much for looking after my Sefer Torah. Can I have it back?" The man goes, "A bit funny. I've been on the same plane holding Sefer Torah. You couldn't find me until now. It's a bit funny." He goes, "No, I was busy with my kids and it was a..." What's happening? Eventually it turns out that people get Sefer Torah written in America or anywhere. Written by Sofer in Yerushalayim. They find the Yirei Hashem, they find the Talmud Chacham, they get a person to write it in Yerushalayim. And then they need someone to bring it over for them. So they find that people who do this as a business, they'll bring over the Sefer Torah for a fee. $3,000, $4,000 payment, a few nights up in a hotel, and a return flight, obviously. And that's what this man was doing, and he'd done it enough times that he worked out ways of getting other people to do his job, and he found an assistant, and that's what he had done. He'd given it to this man, that's what it turned out. That's how it was inspired.
Choshev fellow, yeah.
No, he didn't write it, so he's not the Sofer. The sofa's in there, sure. He's a courier. The person in America finds a courier, not the... What does the carry deserve? Does he deserve a Sefer Torah?
No.
Right. Does he deserve payment?
Yes.
Right. How much? There was no agreement. Was there an agreement of payment between them?
How much is the going rate?
What's the going rate? Exactly. So what is the going rate? Well, there's no really going rate for someone who's anyway flying from Israel to America, is anyway going on the flight, and has to hold the Sefer Torah as an inconvenience. There's no market price for that. There is a market price for people who have to organize it to take it from the sofa to the airplane, take it through the airplane on the other side, take it to the relevant address, bring it to Hachanah Sefer Torah. There is a price for the whole shebang. But just for this middle, there's no fixed price. So what do you do?
How much does he charge?
How much does this matter? Apparently it's $3,000 and $4,000.
Just hold it. The whole job is he paid?
Yeah, the charge for the whole job. Yeah.
He's also charging. He also costs each part of the job. Do they give
an itemized billing?
I don't
think the industry is so...
You should really ask, how much does somebody want to hold the Sefer Torah for 11 hours on a plane?
Exactly. Is it enough to ask one person?
Sorry?
Is it enough to ask one person?
You have to ask a few.
Exactly. The Shulchan Aruch says, in a case where there's no price for anything, you don't know how much to pay, yeah. Second-hand objects, which per person damages. Mm-hmm. Things which don't have a market value, you ask three people, and you get, so anyone flown recently? You find people who have flown recently, how much would they, it has to be a similar flight, 11 hours, and you ask them how much, huh?
$10,000.
$10,000? So that's number one. Truth is, it'd have to be a person of the same age group, you know, same family status, same everything. So that's what they did. The reason being, this is not the same as the first case, because in the first case, the guy had no intention to take it through customs. And therefore, the nene wasn't a nene, like we said, v'shem ashach, that if you don't have intention to give somebody benefit, the person doesn't have to pay for it. But over here, the person carrying the Sefer Torah had full intention of carrying it. He didn't want to keep it. He knew what he was doing, and he intended to do the job. And therefore, it would have to be paid, as we said, according to the relevant price. Sure.